She spent 16 years saving lives in war zones and walking the halls of the White House. But it wasn't until everything fell apart that Brittany Ryan found her second mission. In this episode of Dogtag Diaries, we explore how a combat medic turned her pain into purpose with Team Rubicon, where disaster zones became healing grounds and service found new meaning. Because when the uniform comes off, the mission doesn't end, it evolves. This is an episode you don't want to miss. We made it! Season 6 of Dogtag Diaries, where every military woman deserves a platform to tell her story and have it be heard. I'm your host, Captain Kim, and this community has already racked up over 4,500 downloads. So let's smash 5K together. Share these episodes and help us make season 6 our biggest yet. In our last episode, we introduced you to Brittany Ryan, retired Navy corpsman, Fleet Marine Force qualified, and former member of the White House Medical Unit. Brittany took us through her extraordinary 16-year military journey from deploying with the Marines in Afghanistan to receiving the USO Navy Woman of the Year Award. But beneath the accolades, she opened up about something deeper, what it means to carry invisible wounds, lose your identity after service, and still rise. If you haven't heard that episode, I highly recommend going back and listening. It's raw, it's powerful, and it's incredibly moving. Today, we're picking up where Brittany left off because her story didn't end with the uniform, it evolved. Now Brittany serves in a whole new way as Senior Associate of Operations for Team Rubicon. And in this episode, Brittany dives into how Team Rubicon helped her rediscover purpose, how the organization is mobilizing veterans for good, and what she wants every listener to know about showing up on someone's worst day and making a difference. Let's get into it. Welcome back, Brittany.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here again.
Gosh, we're doing this weekly now, and I think we should just continue to do this on a weekly basis.
I like it. I can probably fill up some more episodes for you.
Well, with that intro, you probably can.
Yes.
So I know I did the brief recap of you, but, you know, I loved listening to you last week when you were like, yeah, you know what? I am a badass. And I really want you to recap you and your journey through being in the military and then evolving into Team Rubicon.
Yeah. So like you said, I did 16 years as a Navy corpsman. I spent most of my time with the Marine Corps, which is the side that I truly loved in the military. And then I did a long deployment to Afghanistan, where I was on an all-male team, and we were doing combat missions and all that good stuff. Something I didn't talk about last time is, like, I was on a police mentoring team in Afghanistan, where I had my own Afghan medics coming in to learn from me, which I thought was a very powerful thing as a woman. And then, like we talked about, I did 3 years at the White House, which was a great time under the President Obama administration, which was just so great. And then, you know, my last duty station was me being pushed into females in combat roles. So I was one of the first female corpsmen for 112, the artillery unit out in Hawaii, which led me to, unfortunately, having my mental breakdown, which caused my career to come to an end, where I was medically retired. And then led me to Team Rubicon, who I happened to find in 2017, and really dove deep with the organization starting February of 2018. I did my first service project or operation with them, where we were helping clear out an evacuation route. And it was just so great to see. I think there was between 50 and 100 volunteers on the ground just working so hard. And, you know, these people aren't getting paid. So they're out there choosing to work this hard to help the community. If a fire were to come through there, that was like their one way out if the other roads and stuff were blocked. So, you know, that was the start of it.
Well, let's talk about Team Rubicon, because maybe some listeners know, but it's a veteran-led humanitarian organization that responds to disasters and crises around the world. That's huge. And that's where you found your place.
Yes. And that's kind of like the start of it. I became a Sawyer One, which is just, you know, you can do the basics of making big trees into little trees that are on the ground and helping clean up. During hurricanes, a lot of trees fall, so we're able to go in and do that. Or, you know, houses flood, so we can go in and take out the damaged debris, whether that's the couches, furniture, other things that are in the house, or even taking down the drywall. And it's no cost to the homeowner. So we really try and focus on those people that need the help that really probably are not going to get the help.
Well, so what was your first attraction? Like, did you accidentally roll upon this, or was this intentional? Were you seeking something like this?
So I think it was a little bit of both. When I was stationed in Hawaii going through my med board, I was part of the Safe Harbor community or Safe Harbor program. And they really brought me in and was trying to like get me prepared to get out. I was one of those people that was really working towards 20 plus years and really did not have a plan to get out. So when my med board happened, it caught me really off guard.
And just explain really quick to the listeners what the med board is.
It basically is determining that I am unfit to continue my regular duty. And at the time, my psychologist is the one that put it in for me and pretty much said, like, you can no longer continue. And me being the hard-headed person I am, I just was like, oh, I'm fine. I can continue on. And my psychologist was like, no, if you keep down this path, it's not going to end very well for you. And so he forced it upon me, but in the end, it was the right choice and it needed to happen.
Yes, that's why I tell everyone they need a therapist and they look at me like, what? But when you're embedded in something, it's really difficult to see beyond that. And especially when you know what happens when you get your 20-year letter, that's like a security blanket.
Yes.
And you did 16 years. So to have your psychologist, I just want the viewers to know the impact that this had on you. But at the time you were like, wait, no. And now you see it as a blessing. So yes, please continue. I just wanted to let them know how impactful it is to have that 20-year letter.
No, and I appreciate that. And it's crazy because I was so severely depressed and I didn't even realize how depressed I was. Like, not showering, not wearing my uniform properly, like all things that was way out of character for me. And besides the psychologist, nobody really noticed. And so that really hurt once I realized the gravity of the situation. So now I'm with the Safe Harbor program. And I think I discussed this a little bit in the last episode where they wanted to select somebody that was going through combat-related PTSD to attend the Stand Up for Heroes. And so it just so happens I was that, and I was a female. So I think like that's why they really picked me and I was selected to go. And so we flew from Hawaii to New York, and I happened to be sitting next to gray shirt, is what we call ourselves, our volunteers, because our uniform is a gray shirt, on the plane ride from there to New York. And we just talked about Team Rubicon the whole time. And I was like, this sounds like such a cool experience. And while I was at the Stand Up for Heroes, Jake Wood, who was one of the founders at the time, showed up with a group of people and they were there to support this volunteer. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, I can't believe the CEO and like his 10 people that he brought with him are attending this event to support him. And you know, the last few years of my career, I didn't have that. And I was like really losing trust in my leadership because of all the things I've been through. And so I was just like, this is amazing to see. And I cannot believe like this is happening. So fast forward, I head back to Hawaii and I tell my caseworker about like my experience with Team Rubicon and all that stuff. And she's like, perfect, we're signing up. And I think she knew I wouldn't really do it if she wasn't there to do it with me. So she did it as like a support. And then she found an event for us to go to. And back then they knew people really struggled with getting the things that needed to be done to be active. And we were a little bit stricter with what we needed done. So today we still require a background check, but back then that we required ICS 100 and 700, just so you understood the incident command structure. So when we did get involved in disasters, we were more prepared and could speak the language. So they helped us finish the test and all that stuff. And so that was like my first interaction. And then when I got to Colorado, after I was med boarded out, you know, I just had one of the volunteers was calling me, emailing me, texting me all the time and like really trying to get me out there. And I was like, man, they must really care about me, or this is weird. And I should probably go see why he's bothering me.
Yeah, you weren't used to it from the way you were being treated in the military.
Yeah. And so that was back in 2018. And then I just dove in deep. And that's the cool thing about Team Rubicon is like, you can give what you can give. And if you have a lot of time to give, they'll take it. But if you can only do a day at a time or a week or whatever, TR will use that and really appreciates it.
And so back then, how much of your time were you giving?
All of it, because obviously I was still trying to recover and figure out who I was now. I joined the military at 17, and here I am in my early 30s with like no career, no anything, and just feeling such a dud because I've been doing this since 17, and now I was deemed unfit. And, you know, if the military didn't want me, why would somebody else want me? So it's like going through that healing process and really rediscovering my identity.
Yeah. And it sounds like it was a positive experience for you because not only were you volunteering 100%, you then climbed the ladders and got yourself into a title role. Talk about those.
Yeah. So like I was alluding to earlier, I did Saw 1 training, which I had never touched a chainsaw before in my life. And so here I went through that. You know, people in Team Rubicon saw something in me. And so shortly after I became a Saw 1, they're like, you're going to become a chainsaw instructor. And I remember being on the phone call with the leader that called me. And I was like, I think you called the wrong person. You should probably call somebody else. And they're like, no, we called you and we want you to go. And so, you know, a little back and forth. And I think it was September. I was in Iowa doing the chainsaw instructor course. 2018. It just was like one thing after another very quickly for me. And while I was at the training, I was used to Colorado trees, which tend to be pines and softer wood, where Iowa has very hard wood. And I remember bringing the chainsaw to the tree to like get ready to drop it. And it was a black locust and the bar hit the tree and like bounced out. And I really should not be here.
You're talking to a level one trauma nurse, and all I could see is I'm having flashbacks now of all the traumas, the chainsaw traumas we've had. Oh, dear. Did you end up getting injured?
No, I luckily like knew enough to know what to do. But yeah, so basically, I was just in my head, nervous and all the things. But once again, the leader there really saw something in me and really pushed me and like forced me out of my shell, which then led me to, you know, TR has certain levels where we have our volunteers, we have leased employees, and we have full-time staff.
Talk about that a little bit, because I really want the public to understand this. And so really be interested and get interested and volunteer for Team Rubicon.
Definitely. So we have our volunteers, which is our major base, and that's what we like to focus on because our volunteers do a lot of the work, but we backfill with our leased employees and full-time to make sure our volunteers are supported and taken care of. So I was brought on as a leased employee with the mobile training team. So I dove really deep into training, and what my specialty was training the Sawyer 1 class that really forced me to be confident again and be the person I was evolving into after everything I've been through. So I got to travel all over the US teaching classes and just helping people. You know, when you're handling a chainsaw, it's a very, very scary thing. And it's similar to a weapon. You clean your weapon, you take care of your weapon, you do everything with your weapon. And Team Rubicon treats the chainsaw in that same manner. So like there's a lot of cross things happening. And so it really was able to let me work through things that wasn't combat related and wasn't a chainsaw is dangerous, but it's not as dangerous as going to a combat zone and all those things. So I was really able to process a lot of things. And when you're teaching these people that might be nervous or scared about the chainsaw, but you watch them like grow, and it's just 2 days. You've seen these people grow in just 2 days. And it was like, this is amazing. And I'm so glad to be a part of this and like help people grow. And, you know, it just helped me build back up to the person I am today.
I was just going to ask you, what did it do for you with your self-esteem and the depression? And usually when we're in those roles, like, you know what it feels like to be out there and be scared. So you already lived that world. So I can only see you as like, yes, very instructional, but very compassionate and empathetic. And like, they probably took to you really well.
Yes. I think that's something I struggled with because, you know, we didn't talk about too much of how my career ended and what all happened, but I heard a lot of, you're just a piece of shit, or you're not doing things right, or you're lazy, and all these negative things. And so I didn't think I'd ever be a leader again. I thought that door was closed and there was no way it would ever open again. And I didn't think I deserved it either. I know, like, you know, when you come back from combat and you have junior sailors, I rode them very, very hard, but I realized now it was out of fear. I was part of an all-male unit and we're still at war. So they're probably going to go to an infantry unit, and the likelihood of death and all those things just, it scared me, but I did it the wrong way. Obviously learned now that I used anger to like hide my fear for what I was feeling for all those guys. So, you know, I was scared to like step into these roles with Team Rubicon, but I had such a great community around me that I was building. Like, you know, I said earlier, I have a lot of distrust with men because of like Afghanistan and all the things that happened. But then I started building up relationships with men again, and they like took me under their wing, and they were so great with wanting to teach and mentor. And I was like, not used to it. And it was very like uncomfortable, but then it was like, oh, you know what? Like, I can see this guy being my grandpa, and like, you know, he's like helped me grow and become the person I am today, which led me into my first role with Team Rubicon, which full-time role was the branch training associate. So I was just diving deeper into training and helping now across the entire West Branch.
How many branches do they have? Are they called branches or regions, or how do they break them up?
We are two branches now. We are the East Branch and the West Branch. And so it's kind of like we're trying to separate ourselves into disasters. So like the East Branch does a lot of hurricanes, floodings, tornadoes, and the West Branch is flooding, fires, and trying to...
Earthquakes?
Yeah, earthquakes. Thank you.
Okay.
So we're trying to like make sure we're prepared for those sets of disasters. And like both teams, we cross over each branch to support each other. But we want to make sure we're more professional in the types of disasters we get. On the West Branch, we'll do a lot more mitigation work. We're on the East Branch. They get the big hurricanes. So they kind of focus in that aspect of training. And so, you know, I was preparing the West Branch for all the types of training we needed at the time. And it was so much fun. And it was like, I get to like keep on influencing people through training, which was a great time. And I really enjoyed it. But then I was kind of asked to move into the operations associate, which is what I am now. And so I am responsible for Washington, Oregon, and Alaska. And I make sure our volunteers are trained, can respond to disasters or mitigation work and service projects and all that good stuff. And I have around 70 volunteer leaders that fall under me. And so, you know, going from thinking the door is closed on leadership to now building volunteer teams across these three states. And they're very big states, and like they have a lot of complexities. Like Alaska, you know, it's hard to move things around and nothing is close. And trying to figure all those things out has been such a journey.
Yes, but leveraging your military background and the operational planning skills to support all that is huge.
Yes.
Like, I love that you were able to tap back in there, because really, I know we really didn't tap upon that whole depression or dive into that whole depression period. But when you're depressed like that, you were saying you didn't feel like doing anything, showering, eating, getting dressed, like you are so sad and have no motivation. And look at you.
Yes. It's something I never thought would ever happen again. And something I, you know, one goal I wanted once upon a time was to be a master chief, to lead sailors. And, you know, I didn't get to do that, but now I'm doing it in a different aspect. And like, leading volunteers is probably one of the most rewarding, challenging thing I've ever done. And like, our volunteer leaders choose almost to work a regular job, but they're not getting paid for it. They're looking for areas that need mitigation work. They're going out, scoping it out. They're putting in events into our system to get volunteers involved. And like, sometimes this takes up 5 hours of their time. Sometimes it's 40 hours. And these people are choosing to do it and wanting to do it. And I think it's just such a cool experience to see. And I'm so grateful for these people.
I love that you said that. And you can tell, just like Jake, you saw Jake, the CEO, at an event, cheering on like his team and his volunteers. You're doing the same thing.
Yes.
You're doing the same exact thing. And I love that. And talking about like the volunteers, the 5 to 40 hours, that's just for training, correct? Like, that's not when disaster strikes.
So that is kind of covering that aspect of it. And that 40 hours could go up depending on what's going on. But if we're doing something small, like a training event, that might take 5 hours a week. But when the hurricanes hit and we're here on the West Coast covering down for the East Coast, we try and start our day about 9 a.m. But on the West Coast, that's 5 a.m. for us. And we go until we know the situation, or we know the operation is getting plugged in correctly. So during hurricane season, we could be working specifically for the West Coast, 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. So those hours do add up, but we know where it's temporary and we're getting gray shirts on the ground to support these people that are vulnerable, that won't get the support that is needed because they're low income or they have little to no insurance. And so we really try and focus on those folks so we can get out there and make sure they can rebuild and stay in their homes.
What an amazing mission.
Yes.
What an amazing mission. And it's not just for veterans, correct? Civilians can be part of this as well.
Yes. Everybody is invited. We have our veteran pool that we like to talk about. And then we have our kick-ass civilians. We like to give them a name so they feel they're just as equal as veterans. They should not be seen any less than us. And another pool we really like to focus on is our first responders and trying to get them over to help this organization as well.
The first responders, let's talk about that. Are you talking medical?
Medical, fire, police, all first responders. Yes.
And so did you ever participate in that role? Because you were a Navy corpsman, devil doc.
Yes. Honestly, after I left the military, I think I started to realize that medicine had become kind of a trigger for me. And so when I first got out, and I got out back in 2017, I really struggled with it because going back to, you know, I was in the medical field for the military since 18, 19. And so it was in my blood. It's in my bones. Like, I love medicine. But I sadly closed the door on that chapter. And now I don't miss it. I thought like I would be still hungry for medicine. But I think serving volunteers that serve people on their worst day is really fulfilling me in that aspect.
Okay. I like the transition. I like that either way, you're like this helper. You're a guider, you're a helper, you're a lover. Like, you just talking to you, a very calming, but inspiring, very inspiring personality. I feel like they picked the perfect woman for the role.
I really appreciate that.
Yes. Yes. Let's talk about one of the missions. What was your last mission?
So one of the last ones we did that I participated in, it was a wildfire mitigation in Central Oregon. And so we were able to go out to the community and help them clean up the area. They have their own volunteers, but they don't have a large number of volunteers. And some of their volunteers are a little bit older. So I want to just preference, like, most of our volunteers are 55 and older. So older folks can get out there and do some amazing things, but sometimes need a little bit more help. So this community really needed the help, and we were able to get out there for 10 days. And I think we moved 56,000 cubic feet of debris, which makes it safer for that community. If a fire comes through, it'll make more challenging for fires to start climbing the trees. Because once the fires climb the trees, that's when they become really dangerous. So we were able to help that. And we were able to show like what we can do for properties to make it more defensible against fires. So, you know, we were able to show the community what their homes should look like. And if they want us to come back and do it for them, like we can come back at a later time and once fire season is over and help make their homes more defendable.
And so you were out there for 10 days?
I wasn't. I had to come back and get back to my regular Team Rubicon job. So it's like I get to volunteer with the volunteers and then I still have to come back. But we did have volunteers on the ground for the full 10 days.
Yeah. And so how do the communities feel about you coming in? Do they work well with you?
I think it depends on the area. For the most part, people really do like us coming in and helping. A lot of people like to make us dinner or bring us cookies and stuff like that to like repay us in that aspect. But there are some areas that are not a fan of governmental type people. So we have to be kind of careful going into those areas. If they think we're tied to the government, we have to be mindful of how we act and how we go into the community, because we want to respect that, but we have no ties to the government. We're a nonprofit, so we just want to help.
And how do the teams that are already established in those communities to help take to you?
I think like for Central Oregon, when we decide to go back down there, they're going to open their arms to us and like be like, hey, now that we know what you do, here's like a place we have for you to sleep and we want to provide this food for you. And so you become part of the community and they really look forward to us coming back and helping them.
And they have their teams out too, right? Like their emergency disaster or management teams out on the site as well.
Yeah. So if we are talking about hurricanes, the emergency managers and what we call the EOC, Emergency Operations Centers, are activated. So what we'll do is we'll plug some of our volunteers into the EOC to support. And so that's something we can help with. We have what's called command and general staff, and EOCs have that as well. So we can actually go in and backfill some of those positions. So the EOC staff members can take breaks. So we're kind of like a jack of all trades in the emergency side of the house to help alleviate and help give people breaks and all that stuff, because disasters, when they do hit, sometimes you're on for a month straight. And if you're not able to get that time off, you're just creating fatigue, which then you start missing things, and we just don't need that.
I am learning so much about Team Rubicon. I mean, I knew a little bit and I know I'm part of the team. I didn't do any training yet. I definitely want to, but wow, like this is amazing. And you only started with, I believe it was like the earthquake in Haiti, and there was only a team of 8?
Yes.
Yeah. And how much you've grown.
Yes. We started as a team of 8 back in 2010 in Haiti. Jake Wood being a prior Marine and some of the other people that he was with just were doers and saw a need and wanted to go out and do. And because of that, we were able to start what is Team Rubicon today. And we're just over 200,000 volunteers supporting this mission. And yeah, everybody's welcome.
And continuing to grow.
Yes. Every disaster, we get more and more people signed up.
But even like the programs, you now have a new program coming out. And I would love for you to talk about that.
Yes. So I know during the last session, we were talking about how I left a lot of women behind because I didn't want to be classified as what the stereotypical view of women were. And I didn't realize how important it was to have women relationships. You know, I missed out on so many important things.
I'm with you. Yes. It's so important.
Yes. And so in Canada, they have what's called SWET. So it's Service Women Education and Training. And they've done 2 cohorts, and I was able to participate in both. And it's just all women training, building each other up, talking about leadership, talking about what are common things we've dealt with. And, you know, almost every woman has the same story, like dealing with terrible things. So we decided to create one down here in the States.
Did you initiate that?
Yes, me and my counterpart, Erin. We started it and we have called it Women's Initiative for Leadership and Development. So we've officially called it WILD because how appropriate for...
Yes.
And so we're actually going to kick off our first cohort at the end of August with 20 women going to a camp in California. And we're going to do SAW 1 class and SAW proficiency and what we call our incident commander course, because we want to get more women into leadership roles in Team Rubicon. And we want to make them more confident and make them realize that everything you're dealing with, other women have dealt with. So you shouldn't feel alone, and you should be able to feel like you can build up these relationships with women, because I think for whatever reason, us women feel like we shouldn't be friends or we shouldn't be doing this, but we're missing out on so much. And we really need to build up a better relationship with all of us and just be a more unified front together.
Yeah, because once you get us together, everyone better watch out, because you put like capable, intelligent women together who may not feel like they're part of anything. And like you said, that loneliness, but you put them together and you say, hey, you're not alone. You have a community and we will support you whatever way you need. And we actually listen. We listen. Tell me what you need and we will, I'll do that for you. And we're not used to receiving that then. We're like, wait, what? What do I need? How can I feel valued? And then you start thinking about it. So yes, I love that empowerment.
It's so important. Something I realized during the first sweat in Canada, they decided to do an all veteran one. And so me being a veteran as well, you know, I'm American where they're Canada, but we still had the same things happening and we still felt the same. And, you know, a lot of the women said the same thing where I just was acting like a dude to fit in and not be seen a different way. And it was just really amazing to hear and validating. And like for the first time in my life, I was like, I feel seen and I feel heard. And I think one of the coolest things is we did the same thing where we did a SAW 1 class and a proficiency. And I've never seen women so relaxed, so confident, just like big grins on their face. They didn't have to oversell themselves or be more confident than they had to be, because, you know, sometimes when men are around, we oversell ourselves to be something we're not. So we fit in or we blend in or, you know, we don't look stupid or whatever the case is. And that was the first time in my life where I've seen women just be women, giggling and jumping around and just like doing all the things. And I was like, you know what? I've missed this. This is something I've never had in my life. And I felt angry at the military for making me feel like I shouldn't be friends or mentoring or guiding women. But now I can give back. And this is my way of giving back to women by creating this program. And I know it's going to be successful, but I'm hoping like we can keep it going for many cohorts and just building up more confident, badass women out there.
Yeah. Well, it's successful. You already have your first cohort full.
Yes.
20 women. That's amazing. I'm only saying this from experience and from our nonprofit Reveille & Retreat Project. It only builds from there. Like, it is amazing. And Brittany, how cool is it to drop into your feminine energy? Like,
oh, it's so great.
I'm still learning to do that, because for so long, you know, had that male energy to kind of fit in or to keep myself safe, like puffing out my chest and putting my shoulders back and having my voice drop more. But I'm finding this beautifulness in dropping into the feminine energy.
Yeah, there's a power in women. And I think, you know, back in the day, if you go back to the witch hunt trials and all that stuff, like women together is powerful. And I think people knew that. And I think like women are starting to realize like we need to come back together and it's important for us.
and start making potions again and casting spell. No, I'm kidding.
But women together is important and it's a powerful thing and we need to do better about it.
It is. And I am so proud of you for bringing yourself out of that dark time. And I know you had a lot of help, but if you didn't decide yourself that you were worth living for, you wouldn't be here. So I'm really proud of you for trusting in yourself, even though you probably were like, I don't know where this is going to take me or what's going to happen, but just following that and trusting those people who saw something in you when you didn't see something in you. And it's okay to get to that stage because we've all done it. Like you said, all the women have similar stories. We've probably, most of us all been there. And it's scary. And you hope that someone comes along that you can trust to be like, let's go. I see you. I'll help you. And we're going to get to where you need to be. So I love that you had that support. So another question, I mean, you are doing so many things already, and I love that you developed this program. Is there anything else you see in the future for yourself? Or do you just kind of leave it up to the universe at this point?
I think right now I'm leaving it up to the universe. I really hope this wild program becomes something, and I would love to move into supporting women in that aspect. I think moving forward, doing more things for and with women would be, I would love to go in.
Well, I feel like we are going to meet again because we have similar paths. What our nonprofit does in empowering women and bringing them full circle, and you doing the same thing. And I think it's just beautiful. And we met for a reason. So I'm excited to see what comes out of this as well.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'd love to learn more about your nonprofit too.
And I can't wait to hear about this first cohort. And I really want to be part of one of them.
Yes. Then when we're moving forward, we're going to start doing like a little bit better with the selection process. This one, we wanted to like make sure we involved leaders. So this way we can bring it back to the volunteers to take a little bit more ownership. So like moving forward, we'll have it more open to a lot more women.
Okay. And we will have the website in the show notes. So anyone who's interested in being part of Team Rubicon, please take a look at that. Go on this website and volunteer, because if you get Brittany, if you're on the West Coast and you get Brittany as your senior associate of operations, I mean, you're in the best hands possible. And what better way than to give back? That's what we're all here for anyway, to help one another. Some of us are more fortunate than the others, so it's a true gift to give back. So thank you for being you, Brittany. Thank you for finding yourself out of that dark moment and becoming who you are now. I'm so proud of you.
I appreciate that. This has been a blast.
I'm so proud of you. Thank you again for being on Dog Tag Diaries.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Dog Tag Diaries, Season 6, baby! We're gunning for 5,000 downloads and 26 Apple reviews, and I know we can get there with your help. Share these episodes, leave a review, and let's show the world how powerful military women warrior voices really are.